ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರೋ ಶ್ರೀಯುತಾಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರು. ಟುಡೇಸ್ ಸಬ್ಜೆಕ್ಟ್ ಮ್ಯಾಟರ್ ಫಾರ್ ಎ ಬ್ರೀಫ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಷನ್ ಇಸ್ ಪ್ರೇಯರ್ಸ್. ವಾಟ್ ಎಕ್ಸಾಕ್ಟ್ಲಿ ಇಸ್ ದ theology behind praying? I'm sure of all the people present here, we all have had experience of prayers being answered, isn't it? Can we have a quick show of hands? How many of you have at least once in your lifetime had your prayers answered? So many. If I may ask, and how many of you at least once in your lifetime had an experience of your prayers being unanswered? Mine was very dramatic. I was in Nasik. We were having a Gita class, third day, and as I was about to make one very important punchline, something about accepting Krishna consciousness, and the electricity went out. And it was a hired, rented hall, we couldn't do anything about it. And I was praying to Krishna that here I am preaching your message, and this is the first time. If we get good devotees from this crowd, we can have a nice congregation here. So please, not for me, it's for you. Let electricity come. And so I said, okay, what do we do when nothing works? We chant Hare Krishna. So we said, okay, let's have kirtan. And of course, none of the crowd was conversant with how do we chant kirtan. So devotees were doing kirtan. And eyes closed and all attention on Krishna's holy name, that surely there's going to be a miracle. Krishna is going to send some electricity very soon. Nothing happened. I said, okay, we just close off here. There is some light outside. Somebody brought some lamp or something. We serve prasadam and we say, okay, that's it. And I was thinking that, why would Krishna do such a thing? And of course, we have these experiences, like we say about answered prayers. I was stuck up somewhere, I think it was Pashan near Pune, and suddenly I saw a devotee on a two-wheeler. I said, Krishna is great. There's no public transport available, and somehow this devotee is available here. So small things in our beginnings in Krishna consciousness, we come to know of prayer, and there is one important aspect of bhakti, that is vandanam. Vandanam is offering choice prayers. Who is the personality who represents vandanam? Akrura. He's offered wonderful prayers, a series of them. Of course, the Bhagavatam has many, many sets of prayers. Sometimes there are so many that devotees who read Bhagavatam, they say, hey, the same old thing coming again and again. So we'll also try to see as to what exactly do we mean by offering choice prayers. Krishna has a name for that. Uttama Shloka. One who is worshipped by offering choice transcendental prayers. So what exactly is a prayer? I went to some dictionaries and I got some very dry kind of definitions. One dictionary says it's an entreaty to a supernatural being. Can you just reduce the resonance a little bit? An entreaty or a request made to a supernatural being. It almost seems as if the editors, today's literati, those who those who are men of letters, those who write dictionaries, write books, they decide how do we use language. It almost seems as if they grudgingly want to acknowledge a supernatural being. In fact, those of who are 70 or above and have worked in government offices, you will know that previously, even if you want to go for a leave, it would be a prayer. I beg to remain your most humble, obedient servant, sir. And it's my prayer that since there is a cause which is beyond my control, I may be indisposed for the next 2 days. Even legal law court, they use language like that. There is a prayer, petition, plea. Anybody studied law, you can understand these terms. Somebody had told me about a website. Nowadays, whatever happens is on the web. So the understanding is that God is imagination. There is no God. And there are 50 reasons why there is no God. And one is that prayers don't work. So one university decided to check it out. We really want to see whether prayers work or not. So they took cardiac patients, those who are about to undergo extensive cardiac, that means heart problem, surgery. They divided the group into three parts. One group was not prayed for, that you and your doctor and whatever happens. The second group, they were not told that somebody is praying for you, but somebody was praying. A group of volunteers were told that you should please pray to God that let these people have successful surgery. That's it. The third group was told that don't worry, there are this group of people and they are praying for you, so surely you will have recovery. And what happened? Any guesses? For those who nobody was praying, their recovery percentage was the highest. Then came those who were not told they were prayed for, but they were being prayed for. And the last group was those who were told that there will be someone praying for you. So these university researchers came to the conclusion, prayers don't work. Now, in today's age, where there is so much of everything we want to dissect, analyze, and research, so obviously and naturally some religionists were very angry about this. They say, hey, wait a minute. You can't treat God like some slot machine where you put a coin, the coin represents the prayer, and then out comes your newspaper or milk or your weight or whatever. Can we do that? Can we do like that? Or is prayer a weak-hearted response from a spineless person who has nothing to do, he cannot stand on his 2 feet, he has no self-esteem, and all he can do is just pray, oh God, just give me some success, that's all. Is it like that? All kinds of doubts cloud our mind. His Holiness Sridhar Swami, our dear departed Sridhar Swami, used to tell a story of a man who decided that every day he will give 1 rupee to some beggar or whoever comes. So he used to take his car, he had to stop at a traffic light, and one guy would come there and he would give him 1 rupee. So this man came, one day he got 1 rupee, the next day he came at the same time, he got 1 rupee, and then he came to know that this person maybe has this habit. So every day he would try to make it there. If by chance he would leave, that was only day when he would miss 1 rupee. One day this man had to go for business for 1 month. So after 1 month he came back and his beggar says, 31 rupees, sir. Now can you believe that? That means this person is not a beggar. He feels as if it's my right. So what exactly does a beggar do to earn your piety? The face he makes or the kind of sounds he makes? He slaps on his stomach saying, no food for the last 3 days. What exactly? Does he shout that makes you give him? Or does he say that I am from your same native place, or I am also speaking the same language? What exactly does it happen? In fact, it's not dependent on what kind of things he says. It's whether you want to give or not. Your choice. Even if somebody says, please give me 5 rupees, you say, no, I don't have 5 rupees, or why should I? So, today we feel that the process of prayer is something like God or whatever is up there is supposed to be like an order supplier, and you just pray hard and you get it. Well, that means there is no understanding from his point of view. If you pray, use the choice words or use the choice gestures or whatever. Thankfully, Vandanam or real prayer has nothing to do with this charade, with this farce, with this nonsense. At the same time, prayer for some material situation change is acceptable. You would say that, okay, well, we are not so pure that we can just pray. Oh, if we don't want anything, why pray then? Some people might ask. Satsarup Maharaj used to edit Back to Godhead. In one of his editorials, he says, serious doubt regarding prayer is not whether God can respond or not, but whether the things we want are worthwhile or not. It's not whether God has the capacity to give or not, but what I'm praying for, is it worthwhile to pray for such a thing? So there have been some serious devotees who have prayed throughout the ages in various sects, all kinds of paths. One such saint said, beware, your prayer may be answered. You might say, what do you mean? That means be careful what you pray for. You might get it. And then you might know what to do with it. There is one kind of wrong prayer, or it's not a prayer exactly, where there is no acknowledgement of the existence of God. You just pray that, you know, let everybody be happy, and then let this happen, let that happen. And especially in today's society, very much swayed by Western thought, this kind of secular prayer, you pray for some victim, let's pray for the bomb blast victims. And what do you pray for? And whom do you pray for? Some almost feel as if we are praying to the accused. He is the one who did everything, right? So some people say, why pray to him when he caused the whole thing in the first place? So in this atmosphere of serious doubt and basically atheistic ideas, we worship Srila Prabhupada as Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Nirvishesh, God doesn't have a form. And Shunyavad, that basically everything ends in zero. We had Dwarkadish Prabhu brilliantly delineate Srila Prabhupada's contribution as to, you know, what exactly he had come. And Srila Prabhupada prayed. He prayed by using the prayers of other spiritual masters, other Vaishnavas. He also contributed his own thing. So therefore, bona fide prayer comes in the category. Bona fide prayer begins where you acknowledge the existence of the Supreme Lord. If you say, I'm just praying for your health, or I'm just praying for the world ecology, that's hardly any prayer. And acknowledging doesn't mean that, well, maybe some kind of God exists. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is a science. Science means 2 + 2 = 4. Never less than that, never more than that. That is how we have to understand the science of God. And this book, Srimad Bhagavatam, prepares us for that. Prabhupada guarantees, if somebody reads Srimad Bhagavatam, at the end of the 9th canto, He will be a fully God-realized soul. And the 10th canto will take him by hand and show him a direct window to the spiritual world where the most confidential things are taking place. We know what God does officially, but we don't know what God does when he is having spare time, when he is with his very lovable, very confidential associates. That is, we are introduced in the 10th canto. Just to give an example of prayers which are bona fide, but not for realizing God, there is an example in Srimad Bhagavatam itself of Dhruva Maharaj, who wanted a kingdom better than his own grandfather. So, why was this story included in Srimad Bhagavatam when we are told that don't pray for material things? It so happens that we are materially attached. So the concession is, if at all you have to pray for material things, don't go to anybody else, come to Krishna. What happens? When Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Narayan in front of him, he said, Sthana bilashi tapasi sitoham, tvam praptavan deva munindra guyyam, kachan vichinvanapi divya ratnam, swamin kritartho asmi, varam na yache. Sthana bilashi. There was a desire for some land, property, kingdom, and I was situated in very tough austerities, tapasi sitoham. But now that I achieved you, tvam praptavan, deva munindra guyyam, not easily achievable by saints or very highly realized souls. Kacham vichinvan api divya ratnam. Now I am feeling that what I wanted was like broken piece of glass compared to you, who's like a transcendental jewel, divya ratnam. So here is the recipient of Krishna's mercy telling God, don't give me that. I don't want it. So that is the fulfillment a devotee experiences when he actually sees Krishna face to face. Of course, there is the highest ideal of prayer. Srila Prabhupada, in many lectures, if you make a study of his Veda-based folio, what was the most ideal prayer? Prabhupada cited many prayers, but his favorite was Lord Chaitanya's prayer. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam va jagadisha kamaye, mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir ahetuki tvai. Lord Chaitanya is praying for not even followers, nor the association of beautiful women, nor wealth, not even liberation. Now, liberation is something which people feel, hey, you should aspire for it. He's saying, no, if you don't want to give, I'm happy with it. So if you don't want anything, what do you want? Mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavatad bhaktir ahaituki. Causeless service attitude towards you. Causeless bhakti towards you. Obviously, there has to be something in it. Otherwise, Lord Chaitanya would not be aspiring for it. And that's a confidential message behind Lord Chaitanya's leela. Why is he praying like that? While doing some studies for this topic, I just came upon this small story. It's tucked away beneath the chapter Arjuna Kidnaps Subhadra. The title is Arjuna's Exploits in Dwarka. And Arjuna goes dressed as a sannyasi, so nobody can recognize him. Then he meets Subhadra, and then he kidnaps her. At that point of time, Shukadeva Maharaj stopped for a while. And Parikshit Maharaj was saying, something more. I want to hear something more. So he told the story of how about two devotees, how their prayers were answered. So don't worry, our today's discussion is going to end on a positive note. How your prayers were answered. there was a king of the city of Mithila. His name was Bahulashwa. And he was a pure devotee. Kings and pure devotees, you can hardly make a comparison today. Because Kali Yuga is characterized by godless kings. Bhagavatam describes them as Dasyu Praya. That means basically thieves and dacoits, just dressed in the royal order. So when you have these kind of personalities ruling over you, how can you expect peace and order? But believe it or not, Srila Prabhupada's insistence on saying that Mahabharata and everything is history is because otherwise we would be completely in depression. That if you read, even if you don't believe in the theory, even if you don't believe in the understanding that God creates everything, you have to make do with the Darwinian understanding of evolution. So how the whole earth began? We began as completely idiotic, primitive kind of people. And now we are having the glorious pinnacle of civilization with multimedia, communications, and everything is at the top rank now. How many of us believe that? So therefore, Srila Prabhupada once said, my forefathers were not monkeys. They were Rajarshis. They were Rajas, but they were Rishis more than Rajas. They were Sadhus, they were saints. They were doing their job as a service to God. So Bahulasha was that kind of king. Especially it is mentioned that he never had a desire to just unnecessarily expand his kingdom at the cost of others for his own sense gratification. This is the hallmark of a good king. Not that he is ahimsavadi, he doesn't fight. He fights. He may also expand his kingdom, but not for the sake of expanding for his own sense gratification. Nowadays, the only memories of kings is they used to just go on a whim. So many days, no war, let's start something. So that is why people were so angry with their kings. Especially in France, they just brought him out and chopped his head off. Enough with his kings. So you replace one anarchy with another, then who rules? Only people rule. Communism. That too, experiment has failed. So now we don't have anything. We have the worst of all possible choices, democracy. Where we alone are responsible for our own mistakes. But people say, what to do? At least it is slightly better than the others. But still, if you read Prabhupada's books, you'll understand. Prabhupada says, what actually we need is a dictator. You may say, what? Practically somebody who's a dictator, but is a pure devotee of Krishna. Prabhupada said, like me, in this ISKCON society, everyone obeys what I say. But do you only obey because what I say is what I say? You have that faith that I am a servant of the servant of Krishna. So this king was a pure devotee, and there was a very poor man in that kingdom. So poor, Shukadeva Goswami describes that yatra matram ahar ahar. Every day he would get something which was only enough for that day. No savings. And he also had deities, he also was worshipping them with whatever things he could muster. So here we have again like a sort of a tension, in the sense, there is somebody who has a lot of money, a lot of power and is a pure devotee, and somebody who has nothing, he also is a pure devotee. People might feel, you know, bhakti depends on wealth, or bhakti depends on your knowledge. What exactly bhakti depend upon? Our Vishwanath Chakravarti describes, bhakti doesn't depend on anything. Bhakti is an independent thing in itself. Karma, jnana, yoga, these are things which are to be attained. you do something, then you get something. In bhakti, you don't do anything. You just wait. You offer yourself and you wait. And it descends upon you. So Krishna was in Dwarka. Lord Krishna was in Dwarka with Daruka, his charioteer. And there were so many sages there. There was Vyasadeva, Narad Muni, Atri, Vaishampayan, Aruni, then Shukdev Goswami himself, Brihaspati, Karnava Muni, Maitreya Muni, Chavan Muni. And Krishna just told them, Prabhu, please come with me. And they said, where? Just come, we are visiting someone. So Krishna puts these sadhus on chariot. Now that's another strange thing. Normally they don't travel on chariots. Sadhus, have you ever seen a grand golden chariot and inside there is some sadhu sitting chanting? And these are very, very highly evolved, big tapasvis. They would never agree. But this was one thing here. They saw that the Lord himself is saying. And more important than that, the Lord wanted to go quickly. If he goes, like his chariot goes at the speed of wind, practically, sometimes more than that. And these exalted personalities will take such a long time to reach. So he said, please, all of you, just come. And Krishna's charioteer, Daruka, he just sped like anything. And so many provinces on the way, Kuru Jangala, Saurashtra, Sauvira, so many different names are mentioned. Some of them are extant, some of them can't be located now. But Krishna had to go from Dwarka on the west coast of India to Mithila, which is in the Himalayas. And surprisingly, on the way, people could take darshan of Krishna. They could see that all these sadhus and they came to know that such a thing is going to happen. Lord Krishna personally is going to drive by this highway. So all the people of the villages, towns, they would all gather throughout the way. And they saw Krishna with all the different sages looking like the sun, shining like the sun, with all heavenly planets around him. Now the question may be raised, if he was going at the speed of wind, how could somebody see them? Jiva Goswami answers it. He says that Krishna empowered each and every one of those devotees who wanted to take darshan so they could immediately adjust and they could actually see Krishna. So this is the unique thing about Krishna consciousness. You don't see Krishna because you stand before him. You may say, what? What do you mean? You see Krishna when Krishna reveals himself to you. So when we say darshanarthi, in one sense we take darshan of Krishna. But Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, it's also that we are standing before him and saying, my Lord, here I am available. Please engage me in some service. Like a roll call is taken of all the available servants. A roll call is taken of all the available servants. And those who are available, they are given some service. So therefore, Krishna within their heart empowered them, each and every one of them, those who wanted to take darshan, and they could see. Shukadeva Goswami describes, just the darshan of Krishna was good enough to remove all material contamination. So when Krishna was present on this planet Earth, just by seeing him in that proper vision was enough to remove completely material contamination. Now they reached Mithila. And these two devotees independently have had desire to see Krishna. So they both came. One didn't see the other. So Krishna came in front of them. Shuddhadev, he saw Bahulashva, king, he saw Krishna. And he said, I am so overjoyed. Thank you, my Lord, for coming. He offered him pranams. And he said, please come to my palace. And as they were going, the king came. The king remembered that this devotee also had a desire to see Krishna. So he said, how sad, he's not here and Krishna is coming to my place. What to do? Shukadev saw Krishna. He requested Krishna to come, but he saw there are so many other sages too. He said, well, okay, whatever it is. He's a poor man. But then the thought in his mind was, Krishna is not going to the king's palace. He's only coming with me. Now, how did this happen? There's only one Krishna who left from Dwarka. And there are only individual sages. This is Krishna's potency, which is called Vaibhava Prakash. Krishna is Ananta, Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadim, Ananta Rupam. The same Vaibhava Prakash enabled Krishna to expand himself into 16,000 forms. Prabhupada gave an example in one lecture about a Nawab in North India who married 200 Begums, 200 queens. He couldn't expand himself 200 times. He had to check out whom to go, who can serve him for that day. I was listening to one lecture by Radha Govind Maharaj where he was describing Krishna's Vaibhava Prakash, and this is in the US. One Indian couple, they raised a point. How can we agree that God can be immoral? So he said, what do you mean? So he said, when everybody has to have one wife and be chaste, and how is it that Krishna is described as having 16,000 wives? So he said, is that your only objection? That because he danced with gopis, he married 16,000 queens, and that's the reason why we should disqualify? He said, yes. It's outright immoral. If you can't follow something, how can you teach others? In the Gita, he's telling so many things. Arjun, tapasa brahmacharyena. One has to be brahmachari. Of course, tapasa brahmacharya is in the Bhagavatam, but brahmacharya also comes in the Bhagavad Gita, where you have to be like that. Sixth chapter. So after some time, the whole thing came to a heated point where Maharaj told them, he told the man, did Krishna come to beg for some contribution from you in order to maintain this big family? Or did he take any of your people, your sister, your daughter, or your wife? And now things were at a flash. This couple became so angry, and they were like, they were both equally good atheists. They were complimenting each other. What the husband would forget, the wife would provide. What he would forget, she would provide. She would forget, he would provide. So they said, you can't speak to us like that. You can't become angry, and this is not the way to speak to people. So he said, what do you mean? When you don't have the slightest idea of who Krishna is, even if you don't accept him as a transcendental personality, even if you don't accept him as his good, do you know that when Draupadi asked for cloth, she was fearing that she would be insulted right in front of the assembly? Krishna provided unlimited cloth. Do you believe that? So the man said, well, they say like that. He said, no. Do you believe, if you think that Krishna stole the gopis' clothes, he was not in need of clothes, when he was giving Draupadi unlimited cloth, do you believe that? He said, that's mythology. He said, that's your rascaldom. You are raising one point with me that how can he marry so many? I am giving you one example where he provided unlimited cloth to somebody who was insulted. And you can't believe that. That's mythology. And this is objection. Is it fair? He said, this is Artha Kukuti Nyay. This proverbial story of a farmer who had a hen which gave him eggs. And he was thinking, the front part is expensive because the hen eats a lot. The end part is profitable because that's where I get the eggs from. If I cut it up, I keep the last part, the end part. I don't need to have any expenditure, but I keep on getting eggs. And that's a folly. So therefore, if we take one part of scripture which doesn't agree with our limited logic, and we take as objection something which we don't like, the hen's dead. Our spiritual life is dead. So today, people are not even fair, as you can say, in their allegations, in their objections. At least you had proper adversaries like Paundraka and Jarasandha, and we were having some power. Proper is to call them teeny demons of Kali Yuga. So therefore, we have to be very, very astute, philosophically very strong, when we understand why Krishna does something. We are not interested in why Krishna doing something in a sense Krishna is answerable to us. No. As God, he is Swarat. Krishna is inconceivable. There was one discussion. Somebody said, how is inconceivable? So that's what it means. Inconceivable means how you can ask how. If you know how, then where is the inconceivable there? But there are things happening right in front of our eyes which we can't explain. The other day, Nanda Dular Prabhu was telling me how he had gone to an ENT hospital. One of our devotees was operated there. Now you're all hearing me. If you laugh, I can hear it. But are we thinking there's a miracle occurring somewhere here? Go to any ENT specialist and ask him, what is the process of hearing? How does it take place? The kind of things have to happen inside in order for us to hear a sound is nothing less than a miracle. It's inconceivable how it happens. So therefore, the more we understand things as they are, we can see inconceivable or miraculous things happening even in this material world, which is so limited. So Krishna, when he comes down, one of his desires is to show a full-fledged sort of a window to what happens in the spiritual realm. If you remember those ice skating shows which come to, they travel from town to town. Have you seen? Anybody remembers? They come and they show ice, people skating on ice, doing acrobats. Now there was no ice the day before. If it is Bombay and if it is some Bandra Kurla complex stadium, you have to put so much ammonia, you have to make so much ice. And then after when the show is over, no ice remains. But during that time, it's so cold, you have to come with your sweaters and your winter gear because the whole thing is packed and a proper atmosphere is made. Something similar happens. Krishna comes with the whole Golok Vrindavan paraphernalia. And right within this Trigunatmak material world, made of three modes of material nature, he puts in a transcendental performance. Everything imported from that place. Nothing which is made here is used. Why should he use things which are of this world? When he calls it Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, why should he use things here? So even the queens, they're not chosen from any person here. In one sense, Krishna owns everything, but he doesn't use everything for his intimate needs. So, Krishna expanded. We go to Bahulashwa's palace. Here we are in the palace of a king. And there is Krishna standing right in front of him with all the sages. The king is so happy. He folded his hands. First of all, he gave them a very, very fitting welcome. He's a king. There is no shortage of things. royal bedstead, royal sitting places. Then he started the foot bathing ceremony, Padya Puja. He bathed Krishna's feet. Then he called all his family members. He drank that water. He sprinkled on it. He sprinkled on his family members. And then he ordered sumptuous food. Very, very high quality, dainty, sumptuous food items were offered to Krishna. And all the sadhus, they also liked it a lot. Atithi Satkar is a very important part of Vedic culture. If a guest comes, you know that you have invited someone. That's not technically Atithi. See, the word Tithi means a date, isn't it? Atithi means one who comes without telling you. He has not told me he is going to come, but he has come. So traditionally, householders have this specific duty to respect guests. And especially if you are fortunate to have an atithi, then you have to shower all your love and affection. It's not that it has to be a very expensive affair. In the Niti Shastra, it is said, what happens when a guest, especially atithi and a deserving candidate, is turned away from a house? Niti Shastra warns, whichever household that thing takes place, this event takes place, that a deserving guest is turned away, he leaves his sins in your house and he takes away your pious credits with you, with him. He leaves his sins, he takes away your punya with him. So therefore, previously, householders should be very careful. Now we go to Shrutadev's house. What happened when Shrutadev started welcoming Krishna? Poor man, he was so happy. He started putting out his uttariya, he started waving in the, you know, as simple village folk do. He was just dancing up and down. And then he remembered, hey, I have to take everybody home. That first happiness was so much. So he brought them home. In the palace, Krishna enjoyed garlands, sandalwood paste, incense, new garments were offered to them, glistening gold ornaments were offered to Krishna, lamp, arati offered, cows and bulls were given in charity to Krishna and all the sadhus. But in Shrutadev's place, it was a simple hutment. There was not much what he could do. So he called Krishna and the sadhus inside. He had some mattresses where they could sit. There was a straw carpet, what he could do, poor fellow. Then he had, he got some wooden planks for serving them prasad. In fact, he was so poor that Vishwanath Chakravartipad says, these two were borrowed from neighbors. He didn't own them. This was also borrowed because guests are coming. But what he offered was sweet words. And that is the main thing. If someone comes and he sees a frown on your face, well, even if you give him something to eat, he says, okay, eat this. Do you think that's going to help? No. We started our discussion by talking about prayers which were answered. Now that Bahulashva, he saw Krishna, then Krishna has taken prasad at his place. He now decides to glorify Krishna. This is text 31 from the 10th canto, chapter 86. Shri Bahulashva Uvacha. Bhavan hi sarva bhutanam atma sakshi swadrik vibho athanastvat padam bojam
स्मरताम दर्शनम गतः. भगवान ही सर्वभूतानाम आत्मा साक्षी स्वदृक विभो.
द आचार्यज हैव गिवन अ वेरी नाइस एक्सप्लेनेशन ऑफ व्हाट ही इज एग्जैक्टली प्रेजिंग. ही इज सेइंग माय लॉर्ड यू आर सर्वभूतानाम आत्मा. आत्मा मीन्स द सोल, आत्मा मीन्स द बॉडी, आत्मा मीन्स द माइंड, आत्मा मीन्स सेंसेस. वाई इज इट लाइक दैट? इट डिपेंड्स ऑन वॉट अंडरस्टैंडिंग यू हैव. देर इज अ नाइस एग्जाम्पल इन मध्वाचार्य's चरित्र मध्वा विजय ऑफ वन किंग आस्किंग. देर आर सो मेनी किंग्स हू आर डिसिपल्स ऑफ श्रीपाद मध्वाचार्य. So one king asks his question that, my lord, what exactly is a soul? What exactly is Atma? At that time, Udupi is on the coast. There are so many coconuts. You get nice coconut water there. So he saw one servant carrying a big branch with so many coconuts laden to the kitchen. So he said, stop him. Call him here. He says, take this green, you know, big green coconut. He says, take one coconut out. So he took the coconut. He says, now start cutting it. So he took out a big knife, he cut it out, took out the inner shell. He said, now what is this? So the king said, this is the shell. So he broke that shell. What is this? This is the water. What is this? This is the pulp. He says, now you are telling me different names for things. But previously the whole thing was coconut. What came out was coconut. What came out of that was coconut. But now you're telling this is the outer shell, this is the water, this is the pulp. Similarly, the more subtly you go inside, Atma also changes its definition. If you're on the gross body platform, Atma is the body. You say Atma Hatya, that means he killed his body. If you're on the mental platform, Atma is the mind. On the intellectual platform, Atma is the Buddhi. Intellect. On the egoistic platform, Atma is the ego, ahankar. On a spiritual platform, Atma is the soul, and even deeper, Atma is the soul of the souls. Krishna is even the soul of your soul. He is the power behind that small powerhouse which stays in all bodies. Without Krishna, even the soul doesn't have power. So therefore, great devotees describe Krishna as Sarvabhutanam Atma. But actually, what the king is hinting at is, because you are even the soul of my soul, you have that compassion that even a dull person like me can have your darshan. You agreed to come to my house. Then he says, you are Sakshi. You are an observer. You remember even little devotional service done. Many times we think that all these mangalatis I got up for, all these rounds I chanted, does Krishna remember all I've done for him? In the Upanishads, Ishopanishad, we don't know who the devotee is who is praying. It starts with Om Purnamada Purnamidam. But as you can see, as how he offers prayers, at the end, he gets surcharged with devotional ecstasy. And in that, he's mostly the Jnani type. And he prays, Om Krito Smara Kritam Smara Kritam Smara Krito Smara. Oh my Lord, please, please, please remember all that I have done for you. It's like sweet. It's a humble entreaty. And Prabhupada, he sort of consoles that, don't worry. You don't need to tell Krishna that, please remember all that I have done for you. He remembers every small bit, every minutest thing which is helpful for us in devotional service, which we have cultivated, will never be forgotten by Krishna. In fact, that thought which occurs to us has already passed through Krishna, otherwise we couldn't know it. Because the ability to know comes from Him. Just to give a very perverted example, They say that government servants are very obedient taxpayers. Why? Because they get their salary minus tax. So it's already deducted at that source. The government actually knows what this fellow is earning. So that's something similar. When we get our thought, it has already come through Krishna. It's not that we know something which Krishna doesn't. But still we tell him that, no, please remember, or please don't forget this. And then Bahulashva prays to Krishna, you are Swadrik. Drik is to see. Another meaning, deeper meaning is to be illuminated. Krishna is Swadrik. He needs no illumination. In the sense, he needs no wisdom. He needs no knowledge. He has knowledge coming from his own. He himself knows everything. In fact, Shukadeva Goswami doesn't describe Krishna saying that, hey, I got a message from this king, I have to visit him. How come? How come Krishna decides, hey, somebody's there, I have to go there? So this secret desire cherished by these two pure devotees, what I felt attracted to this simple story is that none of them, both of them, incidentally, knew that Krishna is in Dwarka, but they made no plans to visit Dwarka because they were both busy with the deity worship. That's what the Acharya described. They were both so busy with serving whatever service we have. Like Dhananivas Prabhu that day was saying, somebody asked him that, how do we manage our services? Some complicated question about service. He said, if you have the service, just do it. Don't worry too much about whether I'm doing it this way or that way. Now, we're not saying that we should not improve our service. If we get some feedback, no, we should. But no need to tell the Lord again and again as to what kind of problems we have in our mind. He says the Lord only knows it. Don't let that, the most important thing is, don't let these kind of thoughts hamper your service. If any kind of thoughts about how useless I am, how fallen I am, if it stops your service, that's bad. There was a nice article in the Bhaktivedanta magazine about self-esteem. Now there are so many books available nowadays. You read this book and you know, you see yourself in the mirror and tell yourself that you can do it and you will do it. That's not self-esteem. It's proud arrogance. Do you think if you just tell yourself that you are going to pass the exam, you'll pass the exam? Somebody says, yeah, it worked for me. That's not self-esteem. And conversely, when our acharyas are crying out, Hari, Hari, Viphale, Janama, Gavainu, I lost my life, I'm useless. Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying that I'm a papi, sinful rascal. Anybody might feel that he doesn't have any self-esteem. Doesn't he feel good about anything what he has? Well, these personalities are beyond the control of three modes. These thoughts are not products of a demented mind or some kind of depression which they are suffering from. Even if you don't agree with this, with all these thoughts, their service did not suffer. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is saying, I am so sinful, if somebody hears me, my name, he loses all piety. And if you speak my name, you become sinful. I am lower than the worm in stool. Now this humility produced Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is like so scholarly. So this is the most important thing we have to understand, that these are the devotional outbursts of thinking. Like once somebody was explaining that these prayers come forth because seeing Krishna and how pure he is, how fallen I am. And it was Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, who was a very good scholar, and his analogies were out of this world. So one, he gave an explanation as to why devotees call themselves utterly useless, worthless, and how does it help them? He said, look, it's a law of physics. When there is a super attractive object, like a magnet, and there's a positive charge, if you bring another positive charge, it deflects it. Like magnets, positive, positive, south-south poles, they repel each other. So when somebody goes before God, who is the supreme positive, and talks a little bit about, I'm this, I'm that, I can do this, I can do that, I donate so much money, that positive thing will kick you out of God's association. Not his fault. The way you speak, that charge, that positive charge, will repel you. And positive and negative attract, north, south. Similarly, the smallest kind of negative thing which you say about yourself, which is true by the way, that I have forsaken you, I do not remember you all the time, I cannot chant your name properly, I want to, these are all truths of life. But this negative and Krishna's supreme positive, there will be a big attraction generated. So we find in the lives of these, like Prabhupada's Markine Bhagavad Dharma, Prabhupada planned for it, his Guru Maharaj wanted it. Then he had two heart attacks and he was not knowing what to do. In that utter desperation, he wrote this prayer, preaching Bhagavad Dharma to the Americans. Markine, that means to Americans, Bhagavad Dharma. And how did he sign it? Most insignificant beggar. So, that kind of preparation is needed. So, prayers as offered by King Bahulashwa, they give us an insight as to what kind of prayers Krishna likes. In these devotees' prayers, we also come to know about this world. We come to know there is a Sakshi. We come to know that there is a soul of all souls. So this is the specific benediction. In fact, in the Kaliya story, in the 10th canto later, Kaliya's wives are all devotees, pure devotees of Krishna. So when Krishna thrashed him completely, they all came and said, please forgive him. Although this creature, they use very strong words, this creature calls himself our husband, but actually we are your servants. And he was very proud, very arrogant, very sinful. But now we are happy to see that by your touch, all negativity has been removed. More than that, we know that your lotus feet are not available even to Lakshmiji. And we see the same two lotus feet on his head. How did he deserve it? So then Kaliya also, all his heads, hoods bent low. Once that negativity is gone, then all remains is positive service. Now he wants to offer some prayers to Krishna. But he says, all his life I have never prayed. I don't know what to say. So he just borrowed some prayers used by his own wives. That's what he did. He repeated the same thing. Krishna still accepted that as new. So just see, Krishna doesn't want something, like you don't have to create a new prayer. If it springs forth, that means it is inspired by Krishna. So as sadhakas, we are told it's two things. Deep study of the prayers offered by previous acharyas, in order to know how to pray, what to pray. And also simultaneously, side by side, offering our own feelings, whatever way they come. You don't need to sing a prayer. I don't know Sanskrit. How can I pray? Here's a simple prayer. Prabhupada says in one lecture, my dear Krishna, kindly transfer me
from the service of the material energy to the service of the spiritual energy. That's it. Is that complicated? The last Monday we heard a lecture from Prabhupada. Prabhupada is saying, pray to Krishna, I am inviting you, please come in my heart. This also doesn't require any erudition, scholarship, any knowledge. I'm just inviting you. Now when Krishna comes, that's up to him. You can't say, I already invited you, why not coming? He comes when the call is like that of Draupadi's call. So what is required is that intensity. Then we find even Sutadeva praying to Krishna. Sutadeva was even more erudite. He says,
Namostuste adhyatma vidam paramatmane anatmane swatma vibhakta mrityave sakarana karana lingami yushe swamayaya samritarudda drishtaye.
Let me offer my obeisances unto you. You are realized the Supreme Soul by those who know the absolute truth. Whereas in your form of time, you impose death upon the forgetful souls. You appear both in your causeless spiritual form and the created form of this universe, thus simultaneously uncovering the eyes of your devotees and obstructing the vision of the non-devotees. Very insightful. He is saying that, my Lord, those who know what is absolute truth can realize that you are the Supreme Soul. You appear in your causeless spiritual form. There is no cause for Krishna. Sarva karana karanam. He is the supreme cause. And he does two things when he comes here. Or his advent here uncovers the eyes of his devotees. When Krishna comes, the devotees, Maya Javanika, as explained by Queen Kunti Devi, Javanika is a curtain. That Maya Javanika is lifted. As soon as it is lifted from the eyes of a non-devotee, from the eyes of a devotee, for a non-devotee, the curtain comes. So this universe, which we find so attractive, it obstructs our vision of seeing Krishna. Why? Because we want to enjoy it. If we don't want to enjoy this world, Krishna is easily available. It's as simple as that. This universe is true for those who want to enjoy it. Those who don't want to enjoy it, they know it's temporary. It won't stay for long. In a very brilliant purport in the fourth canto, Prabhupada gives an example, since we are on this topic of covering vision. Say there is a beggar, hapless, wretched fellow, no education, no strength, eats leftovers, sickly. Imagine the worst kind of person imaginable. But he wants to become a king. Nothing less than that. Royal robes, treasury, servants, queens, sons, daughters, kingdom, everything. How can he become one? If he starts calling himself king, that won't do. If you say, okay, from tomorrow your name is Raja. So no, not like that. I want to experience royal life. Anyone suggest to him in which state of existence he can actually see himself sitting on a throne with servants, soldiers, treasury? Dream. That's what this world is. This living entity can never become the enjoyer in real sense. But he wants to. So he's offered, okay, this is a dream, go inside. Just like we in our dreams we say, oh, yesterday I started a big business in my dream. And it became very big. I sold goods, I earned a lot of money.
unfortunately, in the morning I had to get up. So just like the living entity can create a dream-like situation, enter into it. You see, we actually enter into our dreams and do so many things. But then snap, some alarm or someone wakes us up. This universe is also Krishna's dream. That's why it's not real. Are dreams real? But well, the problems are real. If a tiger comes, we say tiger, tiger, tiger. We can't ourselves wake ourselves up from a dream. We need someone else. That's why we need association of other devotees, especially Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. We need a spiritual master. Why? We need somebody who is awake. If you are dreaming, your brother is dreaming nearby, that doesn't mean that you two can do some business in your dreams. Or if he says, okay, you sleep, I'll help you if there is a problem, you help me if I have a problem. But if both of you are dreaming, how can he help you? Now, since Krishna is being praised by this Brahmana, Krishna is saying, hey, there are so many people also nearby. So Krishna decides to take charge. In a sentence which I really find very attractive, in a Bhagavatam purport, Prabhupada says, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead by nature, is a very simple person. How nice, isn't it? So here is a pure devotee praising Krishna. My Lord, you are this, you are this, you are this. The Supreme Lord says, my dear Brahmana, you should know that these great sages have come here just to bless you. They travel throughout the worlds with me, purifying them with the dust of their feet. Krishna is giving the whole credit of this whole episode to these sages. Further he explains, Devakshetrani tirthani darshanasparshanarchanai shanai punanti kalena tadapyarhattamekshaya. He says, Deva, the temple deities, Kshetrani, places of pilgrimage, Tirthani, pious rivers, sacred rivers, that means the deities of various temples, the pilgrimage sites, Tirthas, the various holy rivers, Darshana Sparshana Archanai, one can gradually become purified, Shanai Punanti. Slowly, slowly, you have to go to so many places, you have to go to so many rivers, you have to do so many tirthatan. But what happens when you have these sadhus? Just by the glance of these sadhus, one can attain the same result immediately. One can attain the same result of purification if one comes in touch. That's why it is said that Vaikuntha, one of Lord Vishnu's name also is Vaikuntha. He is Durlab. But Tatrapi Durlabham Manye Vaikuntha Priya Darshanam. Vaikuntha Priya is a devotee of Vishnu. Durlab is Vishnu, but Tatrapi Durlabham, even more rare than that, is to get darshan of Vishnu. So Krishna here is putting the whole onus that something good happened to you because of these sadhus. That's what spiritual life actually is. That when we see this from the beginning point, from the Supreme Lord himself, he says, not me. It's because of these sadhus that you have been benedicted. Because for a long time, Krishna was being offered prayers, and now Krishna is a little bit uncomfortable that why should you offer all prayers to me? So he offers all credit to the sadhus, that they are the ones who have to be given the credit. So just to round it up, we began by making an assessment as to what exactly people understand as prayer. Nowadays, it is seen as a very mechanical kind of thing, or it is seen as some kind of, it has to work. I prayed, you have to give me that. So where is the humility? Where is the prayerful attitude? You could rather just say that, stick a gun and say, better give me. That's more honest, isn't it? So this atheistic attitude has permeated. And the one important thing, which is a hallmark, which is the most critical factor in prayer, is we have to understand, acknowledge the existence of the Supreme Lord. Without that, there is no prayer. So we see through this simple episode how Krishna guides the lives of his devotees, how he takes care of every small bit and tries to satisfy in full the minutest desires of his devotees. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Anybody has a question? Thank you so much. So we'll stop here.